The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. You're very welcome along to the show. It is Tuesday, the 28th of April, 4 minutes past nine. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. And looks like we're going to have a nice day. Hopefully that's enough to lift your spirits if they aren't elevated already. We've got lots coming up in the programme. Community Garda information on the way. I also think we are, aren't we, Caroline, in the garden for the first time this season. So if you have any questions in relation to lawn care, hedges, potted plants, all this manner of thing, anything at all at this early part of the year, maybe 2026 is the year you're going to get those fingers green. It's just not, by the way, if you're lucky enough to have a half an acre lawn or whatever it might be, maybe you're wondering what you can do with that balcony space or that space at the front door. You know, it's all gardening is a broad church, so to speak. Anyway, that and everything else you'd expect on the programme. The lines are open for you right now to get in touch with us on anything that tickles your fancy. 086 60 25 000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25 000. We love your calls too, 07491 25 000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. We want to see the phones, the text machines, the WhatsApp really busy today. And of course, as always, just to give you a gentle reminder, you can watch this programme if it suits you. And that means, by the way, rewatch it later as well. We're on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. So all your mobile devices, your smart TV, your Fire Stick and all that. And across Facebook as well, you just search Highland Radio. Front page of the Irish Times this morning, it's kind of an interesting one because it's, I would class it as a bit of betting infighting, because I don't make a massive distinction really between the lottery and gambling per se. I think they're both forms of gambling and both have problems with addiction and what have you, except one is seen as normalised and the other can be seen a little bit, you know, darker. But anyway, the National Lottery wants the government to stop bookmakers taking bets on its draws, arguing it's being undermined and losing out on some €289 million in annual sales. Without the existence of a secondary market in betting shops and online, the lottery operator said it would have been able to contribute an additional €81 million to good causes such as sports and the arts in 2024. In a report on the socio-economic impact of the lottery, due to be published today, the National Lottery cites research suggesting that bets totalling €828 million were placed at bookmakers on its draws last year, with 35% of players saying they wouldn't play, or sorry, they would play the lottery properly if this option was not available. What do you think about that? Do you think that's fair? Maybe, you know, quite a bit is contributed to the National Lottery, but again, as I say, quite a lot is taken from people in the process. But they want betting shops to be banned from being able to bet on the draws. Another interesting proposal from emergency doctors. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. They're calling for more speed cameras to help cut down on the number of road deaths and injuries. There are still only 12 permanent speed cameras in Ireland, one of them, of course, on the Letterkenny Derry Road. This is compared to the almost 1,200 cameras in Finland, which has a similar population of around 5.5 million. So we've got 12 permanent cameras. Finland, which is comparable by population, 1,200. I suppose, you know, it would have to make a difference. You know, people would have to slow down, wouldn't they, if you had that many cameras? Well, the placement of new cameras is the responsibility of the Gardaí, but a new action plan will be published in the coming days, the Department of Transport said yesterday. Last year, 190 people died on Irish roads, the highest number in more than a decade. So far this year, there have been 52 road deaths, the same number as at this time last year. And the Irish Association of Emergency Medicine said the current trajectory so far for 2026 indicates that we're likely to exceed the 2025 figure. So what do you think as the public, as motorists? I mean, if we are serious about road safety, we'd have to say, well, okay, you know, if Finland have 1,200 cameras, I must actually compare. Do you know what I will do, actually, during the break? I'll compare the road death figures, because there's no point comparing 12 cameras in Ireland and 1,200 in Finland unless we sort of see what kind of impact potentially could be happening. So we'll do that. I think that's an important angle. But as I say, you know, if we are interested in road safety, any reasonable measure to reduce speed and to improve safety, surely we should be in favour of? And that's a question, not a statement. 086 60 25,000. This Airbnb legislation register, it's been going on for ages. I can't keep track of it any longer. But anyway, looks like we won't have to keep track of it if you have a property in the summer, because a controversial register of Airbnb units and other short-term properties may not be in place before the busy summer tourism season. This amid tensions in the coalition over the planned new laws. While Housing Minister James Brown is pushing to bring the laws forward sooner to free up rental homes, the Department of Enterprise says the legislation isn't ready. The proposals have met with resistance from some backbench TDs. Let me see, what else does it say? It just carries on the same story. This is on page 2, and it's just reiterating what was said there. So I think that'll be music to the ears of some, bad news for others. A lot of talk, and it's happened on this show to some extent as well, about toxic masculinity, as it's being described. Well, toxic social media influencers are driving a rise in domestic abuse amongst teenagers. This is a warning from UK police published today in the Irish Sun. They include the likes of self-proclaimed misogynist Andrew Tate, who's awaiting trial on allegations including rape and human trafficking. He alone has more than 10 million followers on X and has previously said women should bear responsibility for sexual assault. Access to violent porn, especially involving strangulation, is also being blamed. And according to the latest annual crime survey for England and Wales, 18.2% of those aged 16 to 19 were victims of domestic abuse, higher than the rate for those aged 25 and older. So these are hard stats. Now, the connection between the two perhaps has to be better proven, but the fact that a new generation of primarily men, as is stated here, 16 to 19, or victims of domestic abuse, 16 to 19, makes up a greater cohort than those aged over 25 is concerning. The Domestic Homicide Project recorded 1,452 deaths linked to abuse since 2020, with 347 in the year to March 25. More than a third were suicides, Assistant Commissioner Louisa Rolfe, National Policing Lead for Domestic Abuse, said. We are the connection between the toxic influences online and the views about women. We see the connection, I beg your pardon, the ink. So they're saying, the police are saying they are seeing that connection. Right, okay, potentially good news for people in certain sectors as it relates to the cost of fuel. Multi-million euro energy support packages for hauliers and farmers are going to be brought to Cabinet today as further one-off measures are being considered. As part of the government's £750 million package, a £40 million support scheme for the haulage and coach sector and a €100 million euro fuel subsidy scheme for the agriculture sector are set to be approved by Cabinet and rolled out. On top of the support package, the government is now considering further one-off measures to help with rising energy costs. As Taoiseach Simon Harris said, more needs to be done. Do you know what needs to be done, right? You might not be aware of this, but this morning BT's profits were announced, and BT would be one of the biggest oil companies in the world. So obviously we're being told that the actions in the Middle East and elsewhere are having a huge impact on oil supplies, the flow of oil, etc. What do you think that does to BT's profits? Would you say it leaves them static? Would you say it halves them, quarters them even perhaps, maybe wipes them out? Maybe BT are losing money. I mean, it makes sense, wouldn't it? Because we're all being screwed. We're all at the pin of our collar trying to put home heating oil into our tanks. It's a miracle the weather's heated up and the thermostat's not kicking in, especially for those who haven't had home heating oil in their tanks for a couple of months. And there's many of you out there, I'm absolutely certain of that. The price of petrol, the price of diesel, okay, it's come down quite a bit, but we're paying that. That's our money that the government decided to give to us to make petrol and diesel more cheaper. So BT, oil company, they have to be taking a hit, don't they? No, they don't. Their profits have doubled to 3.2 billion euro. So in the face of all of this, the hardship of regular people, the company that effectively deals with the core product is doubling its profits. So it's from 1.65 billion in quarter 25 to 3.2 billion in this in the first quarter of this year. Explain that to me. How is that? How does that make sense? How is that right? How can that be justified? If there's an oil crisis, surely it should affect everyone, shouldn't it? It should certainly affect the people that manufacture the oil or supply the oil or transport the oil or whatever BT actually do in that whole process. But no, their profits have doubled to 3.2 billion euro whilst we're supposed to be doing cartwheels because diesel and petrol is just under 2 euro. I don't understand it. I don't know how it's allowed to happen. I don't know why people get rich. The rich get richer when the poor get poorer. I don't understand why that is, but it seems to be the case. Donald Trump and all of his family, through all of this crisis, they've increased their wealth to an astronomical extent. All billionaires seem to have increased their wealth as well, whilst the world crumbles down around them. But anyway, there you go. Snoring. How many of you snore? Experts have shared signs that your partner should listen out for. I make a lot of mistakes, and there's going to be mistakes too, because we have a small team here or there on social media or websites. But the amount of mistakes in the press, where there's many journalists, sub editors, full editors, it's shocking. Experts have shared signs that your partner should listen out for if you. But anyway, listen out. If you wake them up with your snoring, as they could signal fatal conditions. If you are a heavy snorer and wake up in the night gasping for breath, there is a chance you could have sleep apnea. I don't wake up gasping for breath, but I do know there's a hint of a rattle off me, let's put it like that. Well, left untreated, sleep apnea can increase risks for cardiovascular disease such as coronary artery disease, congenitive heart failure and stroke, and is associated with a significantly increased risk of Alzheimer's and dementia. Well, there you go. It's not just the fact that you wake up tired, apparently it's all those blooming things as well. So when I was going through the newspapers there, we were talking about road fatalities in Ireland versus Finland. We've got 12 static cameras in this country. They've got 1,200 static cameras in Finland, and emergency doctors were pointing to that as evidence that we should have more speed cameras. And I'm not for a second doubting that they are the experts. They're the ones dealing with the terrible aftermath of road traffic collisions. But preliminary data from statistics in Finland show 188 fatalities in 2025 compared to 190 in total, 185 on public roads. So actually, in terms of public road deaths, the figure in the Republic of Ireland is less than that of Finland, even though they have all of those excessive cameras. That's just raw data. I'm not suggesting that that's an argument against them. I just said I would check it out, and I did. Barbara Kelly is of Therapists Against Harm and joins us now. Good morning to you, Barbara. Thank you so much for your time.
Good morning.
We have discussed on this programme quite a bit over the years. Victims of sexual assault are being re-traumatised by having their counselling notes read out to them in court. I was under the impression that there had been some moves in recent months to try and address this. So just so we're clear at the starting point of this conversation, what is the situation now as it stands?
Yes, you're correct insofar as I think everybody in Ireland is probably starting to become more aware of this issue because it's been reported on more and more across the media. But last year, Jim O'Callaghan proposed some amendments to the existing laws. And basically, his proposed amendments are now looking at an introduction of what's called presumption of non-disclosure. And this will basically mean that notes of survivors of sexual violence, that their notes would have what's called a statutory privilege. And the aim, or the claim certainly, of this would be that there would be a restriction of access to survivors' notes, so that I presume the kind of the hope would be that this would somehow reduce the risk, if you like, of counselling notes being called in and used in court cases, so that there would be the aim of it isn't to prevent the use of counselling notes, but that there would be a potential, you know, that the potential of them being used would be reduced.
Yeah, so I think I seem to recall reading that they would have to, it would have to, a judge would have to determine whether or not they would have any material sort of impact on the case.
Exactly. Yeah. So as it stands at the moment, this isn't the practice, but that they Jim O'Callaghan's proposed amendments would be that a judge would be the one who would view the notes and decide if there's potential evidence in them.
But even so, like, that still feels wrong.
Absolutely.
And I wonder, as a therapist, you know, when you have someone incredibly traumatized in front of you, the fact that that's even on the table, that you might have to say, oh, by the way, in me trying to help you, I might not keep notes, or if I do keep notes, you know, another person, another party, be it a judge or whomever it might be, you know, might go through them, you know, the most intimate of sharing, which I presume is what therapy is, part of therapy as well. I mean, that's an incredible caveat in that space.
Exactly. And that's it. That's exactly what Therapists Against Harm is, you know, we keep reiterating this, and we feel as if sometimes we are just talking to ourselves almost, because it is the potential use of counselling notes that often causes the most trauma to a survivor, because they will literally have this hanging over them, the prospect that their notes may be accessed by the defence and basically weaponized against them. Because the purpose of using counselling notes in a trial of where sexual violence is the issue, the purpose of using them by the defence is to discredit the victim, is to in any way bring a sense of, you know, questioning their account.
But what I don't understand is the fairness of that, right? Because you know, we've all seen that the balance the balance of justice and all that kind of stuff. The person being accused, guilty or innocent, the person being accused, there is no scrutiny of their private thoughts or a private outpouring of what may have led up to their activities or not, if you get where I'm coming from. So it's simply not fair.
No, it isn't. And this is what, again, Therapists Against Harm, you know, we're really challenging the constant, and it is a constant loop, a constant narrative that is being used by Jim O'Callaghan and by this government, that this practice must remain within our laws because it is to ensure the constitutional right of the alleged perpetrator to a fair trial. And our argument is, but how is that in any way respectful and a sense of equality when we look at how it is treating the victim in this issue? So the argument that it is a constitutional right, we are basically pushing back on that. And we're saying that, you know, well, firstly, there has got to be a way around this within our legal system. I don't believe that there isn't, but there definitely doesn't seem to be the same drive and passion within the government to find a way around this. So, you know, Therapists Against Harm, we're really pushing for either, you know, counselling notes to be redefined within law, that so that they are not viewed as potential evidence, which is vile even saying those words. And if it is a case that, well, no, there's no way around this, we are then saying, well, maybe we need to re-examine the Constitution and question, you know, how when the Constitution was initially laid down, how were, for example, you know, how were women viewed in our society? So there's so much that we need to revisit, because statistically it is, you know, proportionate wise, it is women who tend to be most at risk of sexual violence in our country.
But not exclusively, which is important.
Absolutely.
That's why
not
everyone listening should take an interest in this. There's a couple of things going on. You asked what view there must have been when this was formed, that in some way The victim is responsible or could be responsible, even if they were the victim of a non-consensual act. That's the only thing I can presume. And back in the day, primarily, exclusively perhaps, would have been women. But also, we're having this conversation in the same week whereby we're talking about, you know, elected representatives giving yes. character references. And I know I should perhaps be pushing back on you a little bit for the sake of balance, Barbara, but I can't. Be honest with you, because it would be very dishonest of me to do so, because it's not how I feel. Like, we're talking about, on one side, the argument of being able to give a character reference and say, you know, this fella, or this woman, but this fella, not a bad lad, even though they did this most horrendous act. And yet, today we're having a conversation about people trying to work through their trauma, but that process being used against them again down the line. There's a serious imbalance there.
Yes, and you know, I actually really appreciate your honesty when you say that, you know, it's so hard to push back and give another element to this, because the reality is, look, anybody we ever speak to, Therapists Against Harm often really reach out and we try to connect with the public and, you know, educate people and let people know what's going on. We have never come across people when we're out speaking to the public. We have never come across people who have agreed with this practice.
I can't actually even fashion a counterpoint to it, to be honest with you. I'm struggling, but I'm not a legal expert. Perhaps a lawyer could. And I think this is where there's a bit of a gap, or a huge gap, dependent, where from a legislator or Jim O'Callaghan's perspective, for an example, and then the likes of yourself, Barbara, and the victims that you work with. You know, if Jim O'Callaghan says, look, we're going to make this very rare, we're going to make it very, very rare, it has to be there, chances of it being used are... But you have to be honest with the person that you're speaking to and say, there still is a chance. You know, you can't yes. say, you can't sugarcoat it. You have to... So that is all, that is still going to be hanging there.
Exactly. As long as there is a risk that this practice can occur, then there is potential of trauma to clients. And the other thing just to add is, you know, again, the argument is that by bringing this, you know, presumption of non-disclosure, that this will, you know, I think what was the terminology is, I suppose, that it will lessen the chance and all of this. Back in 2017, Section 19A was introduced into the law, and that was meant to protect clients. That was meant to lessen the chance of counselling notes being misused in court cases. And we have seen since 2017 that that was not adhered to correctly, that that was actually in many times completely ignored. So we just keep going back to the same thing and saying, you know, if the law can be abused, if parts of the law can be ignored, how is this potentially going to not end up in the same category?
And just very finally, there's been criticism of the Gardaí who seized counselling notes from a therapist, of a woman who'd reported she'd been sexually assaulted. I read the therapist said her home was searched, even though she had never refused to comply with Gardaí and hand over the notes, according to your group, Therapists Against Harm. So that, I'm not doubting it for a second, but that is actually a real case that happened relatively recently. A therapist had Gardaí calling to their office or home to seize private notes of a private conversation with a client.
Yes, now, as I'm sure you can understand, I'm restricted in
100%.
What I can say.
Yes, of course.
But absolutely, we are, as a profession, we are appalled when we heard that this had occurred to one of our fellow therapists. And just to clarify, it was actually her private residence that the Gardaí arrived at in the evening time, demanding with a warrant to seize certain items of hers. And, you know, this, to us as a profession, it just really, it's frightening, because our role in all of this is to try to help our clients to heal, to provide them with a safe, you know, environment so that they can do that. So to be treated like criminals when we are really trying to help the citizens of this country, it is frightening. And again, it just reminds us why we have to keep fighting for this whole practice to be removed from our law.
Yeah. Okay, listen, Barbara, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate
it. Thank you.
Barbara Kelly there of Therapists Against Harm. Now, sometimes I can be naive or miss a point. If there is an argument in favour, or you see an argument in favour, or believe there's a reason as to why the counselling notes of a victim, alleged victim, man or woman, by the way, this is not along sex lines. If there's a counterpoint as to why that should be the case, please let me know, because I'm always interested to learn and to widen my opinions on certain things as well. But as I was very honest with Barbara there, I failed to see the counter argument to it. If it's that it has to be in the Constitution, and we've seen the Constitution used against us in this county in the past, that you can't fiddle with it and so on and so forth, and yet we can routinely when it suits us, it would seem. So anything to say in relation to that, please, 086 60 25,000. I don't wish to pry. Maybe there's a possibility that you had your counselling notes accessed and you can give us a better insight into to what that feels like. I fully respect if that's not something that you'd want to talk about publicly or even communicate to us publicly. But just in case, I'm leaving that out there for you. 086 60 25,000, the WhatsApp and text number 074 91 25,000. That's the telephone number, and the email is comments@highlandradio.com. Now, there's a deep disappointment to see, or at the abuse and daubing with graffiti of war memorials in Strabane. These are connected to the War and Peace Project as part of the Northwest Cultural Partnership. Reverend Sean McClafferty is chaplain of the Strabane branch of the Royal British Legion. He joins him now. I appreciate your time, Reverend. Thank you very much indeed.
Good morning, Greg.
Before we talk about the actions that were carried out, can you talk to us about these memorials, what they are, what they depict, the importance of not just one section of society's history, it's everyone's history, really, if the truth be told.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as it was in the aftermath of the First and Second World Wars, war memorials were established right across the island of Ireland, as well as across the world, really. And they commemorate and remember those from all backgrounds, from all denominations, from all political walks of life, from all social strands of society, those that just laid down their lives and didn't come home. And that's the task of the Royal British Legion. We remember all those who were killed in conflicts past.
So they represent far more than, you know, an inscription on stone. There's a far greater significance of that. So what damage was caused to them on Monday?
Well, sadly, early hours, probably on Monday morning, there was the Strabane Memorial on the Derry Road. It was daubed with white paint with the letters K-A-H smeared across the front of the war memorial.
Can you pardon my ignorance? Is there a significance to those letters?
Yeah, it seems. I'm not an expert in modern culture, but it seems that this has been used in the past, and it basically means kill all Huns.
Okay. Well,
it's very, very sinister.
It really is indeed. And also, too, it shows a great deal of ignorance in that, was it close to 200,000 Irish people took part in World War One and World War Two? I think 180,000, 190,000. The figures can vary depending on where you source them. We don't know their backgrounds. We don't know their religious backgrounds. There were people of all different religions.
There most certainly was. And particularly in the Northwest, there was huge numbers, of Roman Catholics that fought and died in the First World War. If you look at the County Donegal list, about 15,000 killed in the First World War. It's incredible that after all the education and all the everything that's out there at the minute, at the touch of a button, there's still such huge ignorance, surrounding the First World War. And I have to say that the Strabane Royal British Legion, there was never any distinction in remembrance, and there is no distinction in remembrance. That's what makes it so sad. Mm. We've just celebrated our 100th anniversary, and we're just being given a civic reception in the Guildhall now shortly. But, you know, at our meeting, we had a meeting last night, our monthly meeting, and, you know, there was no anger, there was no, you know, there was no cross words spoken. But what there was, Greg, there was huge sadness, huge disappointment that here we are in 2026. And, you know, we see words like this smeared across, you know, a war memorial, which, and a war memorial is more than that. It's akin really to a grave. You can imagine going in to visit a grandparent's grave and seeing it desecrated. The war memorial in Strabane was desecrated.
Yeah, ironically, the people responsible, if they did visit their grandparents, great-grandparents or uncles or great-uncles, they might find that, you know, one of them were amongst the close to 200,000 that chose to do what they chose to do. And whether this island is 26 and 6 or whether it's 32, the truth is we have to, everybody has to coexist. And the only way that we continue moving forward is whether we like it or whether we don't, is to respect each other. That's just the truth. There's no going back. We hope there's no going back. Mm-hmm. The future of this, and it's not just Catholics and Protestants now. There's a whole different population now. This island has moved far beyond almost, I think, you know, those times. We have evolved whether people like it or they don't.
Absolutely right. Respect, but I mean, respect seems to be in very short supply when it comes to war memorials, I have to say, in particular. I mean, every year we lose some of our poppy wreaths are taken away from the war memorial. And that's the same. It's the same right across Northern Ireland. You know, there is a deep level of hatred. I think we have to call it out on this occasion. There is a huge level of hatred when it comes to things of remembrance. When it comes to war memorials and when it comes to poppy wreaths, there is an ingrained hatred of that aspect of remembrance, and there shouldn't be.
Okay. Also, I mean, whilst I understand exactly everything you're saying, I think if you were to sit down and have a conversation or challenge those responsible, you might come up short. You know, sometimes there's a vacuum.
Probably.
A vacuum that's filled with ignorance and what have you. Yeah. You know what I mean? All right, Reverend Sean McCafferty.
I do.
Thank you very much for your time. Look after yourself.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Take care. He's chaplain to the Strabane branch of the Royal British Legion. Mentioning poppies there. You know, many people listening to this show would never dream of putting one on for whatever reason. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we are going to have to respect other people's rights to do what they want to do. And I'm not pitching myself on either side of that, by the way. And vice versa. That's how, you know, particularly if you're very keen on a united Ireland. Profits. BP making an absolute blooming fortune. 3.2 billion euro in profits. Their profits have doubled. The growth in profits as a number is not as important as the percentage. It's about return per million spent. You know, but all I know is I can barely afford to fill the car. On speed cameras, my issue with speed cameras is that they're usually placed or parked on good, straight, wide roads where, yes, speeding occurs, but accidents are very unlikely. Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. But again, and I'm saying this in a very honest position as a driver. If I'm going to be serious about road safety too, could I resist more speed cameras? But then again, we saw the figures from Finland and comparable deaths, even though they've got a thousand times more cameras. On toxic masculinity, please note, Greg, that toxic masculinity and toxic femininity, like parental alienation, are wrong, and similar forms of abuse fed by lies and false allegations, abuse undertaken by both genders, both sexes. Yep, I never made a distinction. I'm just going off the back of statistics released by the British police that show that there's a massive overrepresentation of 16 to 19-year-old, primarily women, who are being abused, and there is a link to toxic masculinity. That doesn't mean there isn't other stuff happening. It's just the report that was out this morning. Greg, as a survivor of cancer who's been cancer-free for 2 years, I'm personally delighted to see the change in law today that we'll no longer have to disclose any medical history when applying for mortgage protection insurance. 1A, fantastic, well done. 2 years cancer-free, that is amazing, and I hope you feel fantastic. And yes, you're quite right. For far too long, people who were clear of cancer on the other end were continued to be punished by a disease that they beat when they were trying to get insurance cover. Interesting that at the White House Correspondents Association dinner, people were more interested in making off with the wine on the table as opposed to their life. Yeah, I think I get where you're coming from, and it looked terrible, and I saw, you know, people doing selfies under the table. But you have to imagine that a lot of people weren't even sure there were gunshots because it was in a completely different space. So you've got music playing in this big ballroom and there's a murmur, right? And then, you know, you hear a commotion. In that moment, you don't know that that's an active shooter or that they're trying to gain access, but they weren't actually within the ballroom. They were in a separate area. So it wasn't quite as extreme for those in there as it might appear. But of course, very quickly it did. But to be honest with you, the instinct to grab booze, really quite an interesting one. On the issue of roads, we're coming into another summer and the hedges have not been cut when they were supposed to be cut. The hedges are pushing traffic across the white line along with cyclists and walkers. A lot of roads need tarred. Why can the council not sort this out? Funny enough, on the way to work this morning, I did note some hedge cutting and I thought, wow, those hedges look nice. But of course, we're a massive county and I'm not sure what the story is there. You know when the roads are going to be tarred, don't you? You know, it's going to be November or December. Isn't that normally what happens? I'm being a bit facetious there, but we do tend to see that work that needs being done very later in the year. And on the lotto, the odds are much better in the bookies, so that's why people go there, of course. But I think the odds are greater, but I think the prizes are less, are they? I don't know. It's not something I've ever engaged in. It's hard to beat the bookie betting sort of a system in the horse racing, you know. There's the puncher stands on now 4 or 5 days this week. And outside people that bet, I wonder how much interest there is in that. So it leads, you know, the national broadcasters, it leads their sports bulletins. I'm sure it'll be on ours as well. I'm not criticising people for doing it. And there'll be, a couple of thousand people go every day, but it's treated as if it is the Olympics or as if it's Ireland in a World Cup final. Like, how big is horse racing to the broader general population if you're not betting? Because it's treated as if, and it was phrased this morning as, you know, one of the biggest weeks in the Irish sporting calendar. Is it truly? Is it truly? Or is it just one big sort of machine that feeds itself? Cathy Farrell is heart failure nurse at Letterkenny University Hospital and joins us now. Hi, Cathy.
Good morning, Greg.
Lovely to speak to you. And we're speaking in the context of a national campaign to drive public awareness of heart failure and to promote early detection. So what is heart failure? Is it the same as a heart attack or a stroke, or is it something different, or how would you define it?
It is something different. People often mix up heart failure and heart attacks, or heart failure meaning the end of life and heart stopping, which is cardiac arrest. But heart failure really is a condition where the heart hasn't stopped working completely, but isn't working as effectively as it should. It sometimes means the heart pump function is reduced, it's not pumping as well. And sometimes it's actually pumping well, but is a little bit stiff as a result of high blood pressure or other conditions. But it's a condition that we want to get diagnosed and treated as early as possible.
How treatable is it, generally speaking?
So it's a bit, I do say, to people like diabetes. We can't always fix it, but we can manage it. So there are a number of medications that can help support the heart to work more efficiently, depending on what type of heart failure you have. But the signs and symptoms of heart failure tend to be signs of fluid retention. So feeling more breathless, more tired, swollen ankles or legs, and unexpected weight gain. So if people feel they have a cough, they're breathless, they don't really know why, we're encouraging people to think about heart failure and to talk to their GP about it.
Now, of course, most medical conditions can affect people at any age, but is there a particular age that we're more likely to really need to keep an eye out for those signs that you talk of?
Well, it is a condition that can affect people at any age, but it is more likely in people over 65. But it's expected about 1 in 5 adults in our lifetime will develop heart failure. And I suppose the older population getting heart failure is because we're managing other cardiac conditions like heart attacks and high blood pressure much better. So people are living longer. But it is trying to raise awareness, because people, as they get older, one in 10 people over 65 will develop heart failure.
Yeah, and it really is quite a significant factor in hospitalizations for those over 65s.
It is. It's the most common cause of hospitalizations, and that's the biggest problem, because each time people end up in hospital with fluid overload or heart failure, then it does lead to disease progression. So we're trying to identify it early to prevent those hospital admissions.
Do you find that it's one of those conditions too that people sort of drive through as much as they can? You know, they live with some of the symptoms that you talk of, and therefore, A, potentially shorten their life quite significantly, but B, actually just quality of life as well, by ignoring some of the telltale signs you talk of. They might put it down to something else, you know, them standing too much, or, you know, I need to get out walking more, or whatever it might be.
You're right, and the most common thing people put it down to is just getting older.
Right.
They think, because they're quite vague symptoms, a little bit more breathless climbing a hill, you know, be feeling more tired. Sometimes even the swollen ankles or legs, they put down to just not moving as much. So it is a combination of these symptoms put together, but not to ignore them or just think it's aging.
And it's always good to get these things checked out, though, isn't it? Because, you know, it may well not be heart failure, but it could be something else that's even more easily treatable. You know, why live with a lower quality of life than you might have to?
Absolutely. And if people feel that they have new symptoms that weren't there 6 months ago, it's certainly worth getting checked out. And we have a relatively easy blood test that can rule it out, that can be done through the GP. Or also, if it suggests that there is heart failure, then they would refer them in to either the hospital or the hub, the chronic disease management hub, to get a diagnosis and therefore treatment early.
Mm-hmm. And just to let people know, especially if you're in the south of the county, that there is a pop-up heart failure awareness roadshow running from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. It's in Super Value in Donegal Town, and it's part of this Blitz by Three Heart organisations to raise understanding of the serious condition. I'm not sure, this is a medical question. I'll put it to you, Cathy, because maybe your advice might be very useful to this listener if you can. I have to take my blood pressure, and the last 3 mornings I've taken it, and it comes up cardiac arrhythmia found. What does this mean? I think that means they need to certainly take that up with their GP, if you don't mind me saying so.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Now, sometimes those blood pressure monitors aren't always accurate if there is an irregular heart rhythm, and it could be an atrial fibrillation, it could be just an extra beat, or it could be a misreading.
Yeah.
An ECG is what we'd recommend through the GP.
Yeah, indeed. And sometimes because of sort of white coat syndrome, anxiety, I could throw readings all over the place myself historically. So it could be anything or nothing, and get it checked out.
Exactly.
Right. And exactly. Again, spread the word, Cathy. It's not a death sentence. It can be a gift of life if you pay attention to these symptoms and live with, potentially live longer, even if you have to live with the condition like diabetes, for an example.
Exactly. So what we say is knowing you have the diagnosis of heart failure, you can live well with it.
Mm-hmm.
It does require monitoring and treatment, but it is important that people with risk factors like high blood pressure, maybe a previous heart attack or stents, people who have diabetes, all at risk of developing heart failure in their lifetime. So just making sure that they get checked out for it.
All right. Thanks, Cathy. That's Cathy Farrell, heart failure nurse at Letterkenny University Hospital. Again, if you're listening to us in the south of the county or travelling down to it, there's a heart failure awareness roadshow running at Super Value in Donegal Town. So plenty of parking there. And it runs from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. But more broadly speaking, don't ignore some of these signs and symptoms. Talking to myself often when I'm talking to you. On road safety, a caller says, nobody abides by the rules of the road as there isn't enough of a guard of presence and checkpoints on the road. Nobody can hold people to account. Should we just all drive around with no tax and insurance? Well, you're very likely to get caught if you were to do that, don't you know? But also too, if you're in your house, your own house, okay, you don't go into the kitchen and just juggle knives for fun. You know you don't do that because it's dangerous, right? You could get stabbed. You don't need the guards to come into your kitchen and say, oh, Greg, stop juggling those knives. I know it's a stupid analogy, but there is a bit of personal responsibility here as well. We know, given our roads infrastructure, and we know, given the guard resources, there's not going to be guards hardly anywhere in a county the size of Donegal, except where you know where they're going to be. So we have to sort of say, well, what about if I kill myself or I kill someone else, or if I end up in a wheelchair or what have you? Do you get where I'm coming from? So I agree with you. I don't disagree with you. But what about personal responsibility as well? Will Paul Canning be on the show regarding his objection to a vote of no confidence in the government? I didn't realise that we vote these people in and then they can vote against us. Caroline, I don't know. Did we inquire? Yep, what? He's unavailable this morning. Okay, okay, that's fine. And he genuinely is unavailable, by the way. Paul Canning's never too shy at coming on, if the truth be told. He doesn't dodge coming on with us. So if he's not available, he's not available. But we'll chase that up for you for sure. On therapy note, surely this is something in the therapist's notes that suggests, proves the accused is innocent. The notes should be used. But why is someone who is the victim of a sexual assault or rape or whatever with a therapist in the first place? And I presume if they said to the therapist, well, actually, you know, I'm starting to realise it didn't happen, well, the therapist then, you know, would work with them on that, I presume. I can't imagine that. I think really what they look for is maybe if there's a bit of evidence, like, I don't know, we've seen it before, victim blaming, well, maybe how someone was dressed, maybe how much alcohol or drugs they had consumed, and that could be used as a stick to beat the victim with again. I don't know. But I appreciate your input. And, you know, there is something potentially there to what you've just said. Hi, Greg. It'll be a sad day for animal welfare in Donegal tomorrow as the ISPCA launch their new name as Buswell's Hotel in Dublin and announce millions of spending on the new centres in Dublin, Longford, Wicklow and Cork, while our beautiful centre in Donegal lies overgrown with reeds. It's not right, and I bet our TDs are invited. I bet they're not our TDs here in the county. But, yeah, it is a very, very unfortunate situation. We covered it extensively on the show, and we are here anytime anyone wants to discuss it. By the way, it's not an issue that has gone away. It's equally as important. And I don't know the ins and outs of where we're at the moment in relation to all of that. But yeah, it's a slap in the teeth for the people of Donegal and the animals and their welfare here in Donegal.
The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Welcome back. A caller says the issue with the war memorial is because during the war, the unionists called for subscription not once but twice, and every Catholic not working had to go to war because of the class divide. Most unionists were working, so less of them had to go. 30,000 unionists versus 100,000 Catholics. Then Britain wonders why the Irish have such a strong dislike for them and their war memorials. Do the Irish have such a strong dislike of the British, I wonder? Or the English, shall I put it to you like that? Lots of people love their football teams, I don't know, and go there all the time. I don't know, maybe they do. 8,000 from Donegal fought in that war. 1,200 were killed, says the listener. The last person to die died on the 11th of the 11th, 1918. He was part of the American Army, and one Donegal woman died, and she was part of the British Army. On the issues of hedges, Greg, I heard you talking about cutting of hedges. I was walking yesterday morning and the hedges in some houses are so out on the footpath, they're out about a foot on the footpath, in fact, where two people can't pass because of the hedge. It should not be out of the footpath. Thanks. That comes in from Eunan. Eunan, is that sort of in more urban areas? Are we talking like private hedges in sort of Letterkenny, for an example, or other towns? I presume by the sounds of it, you're not talking about on country roads as well. Yep, I think that is the responsibility of the homeowner to cut them back, isn't it? And just keep in mind as well, and I know it's a bit of a hassle, but look, you can pick up a hedge cutter for not much money now in some of these shops or wherever you buy your stuff. Just think on someone who's visually impaired and they get your hedge in their face. You would never want that, would you? I don't think anyone would. Just keep that in mind. And there's other scenarios as well. Maybe it could be a mum or dad pushing a pram and they have to step out onto the road. You wouldn't want that either, would you? There's enough challenges out there in getting about, especially if you're visually impaired or have issues walking. You don't want to be slapping people in the face effectively with your hedge. I don't think you would anyway. Right, I'm going to do a couple of requests before I go to my next caller. The Lynch triplets, Margaret and Muff, Sadie and Drung and Mary and Maville. Happy birthday from your sisters, Martina and Rosemary. Five girls, wowzers. Any boys in that family? Any other sisters, I presume? We've heard from them all there. But anyway, happy birthday, Margaret and Muff, Sadie and Drung, Mary Mulville, and that's from Martina and Rosemary. Could you please say happy birthday to Pascal Gillen in Convoy for today? Love from Mary G and family. Thanks, no problem. Happy birthday, Margot Rosny. Have an amazing day. Love from your favourite son, Dan, Faye, Oren, Croy, Kria, and Kaylin. Happy birthday to you, Margot. Happy birthday too to James Johnston from your family. Happy birthday also to Amy Johnston from Granny and Granddad Johnston. Lots of birthdays out there. We love your requests on this show as well. I think sometimes people think that we don't do them. We try and not squeeze them in. That sounds quite dismissive, but we enjoy getting them. Right, so where are we at in terms of Buncrana Nursing Unit? Councillor Fionnán Bradley rejoins the show. He is, of course, Leas Cathaoirleach of Inishowen Municipal District. So what is the up-to-date situation for
on? Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners. So the up-to-date information, Greg, that we have in relation to Buncrana Community Hospital is that a statement, an official statement, is to be issued by the HSE, I believe, at some point later today in relation to the meeting that was held last Monday and some of the issues that were raised at it. Now, unfortunately, there is bad news in relation to the number of beds, in that at the meeting, the officials there present had been perfectly clear that the number of beds after the work was done was to be 41. They had stated that, and I had asked them on two occasions at the meeting to clarify that number, and they were perfectly clear that it was 41, but alas, that is not going to be the number. They made the mistake based on an old HICWA report, it seems, and they were using the numbers that were in the Ash ward, which was used as a COVID ward. There are 11 beds in that ward, and they were including those into the 30 bed, which was the total they had been given all along to get them to the 41. So they're hopeful, following a rejigging of the plans slightly last week, that they will be able to make it into the mid-30s and possibly even to a number of beds that would be at 36. But it's definitely not going to be at the 41 that they had told us at the meeting.
What is the story in terms of the redevelopment of this facility? Because that is really the main aim, isn't it?
Of course, yes, absolutely. And we don't want any further delays, and we made that perfectly clear at the meeting last Monday that there could be no further delays. So with that in mind, the conversation I had with them this morning is that I want them to press ahead now with the works to get the facility up and running with the 35 or 36 beds or whatever the final figure will be. And simultaneously, I want them to begin the process, which they told me they have only yesterday, of looking at future development, because we're very lucky in Buncrana in that the site is on quite a big plot of ground, which is already owned by the HSE. The ambulance, new ambulance base, is to go in what is now the old doctor surgery behind it. And there's more than enough ground for further expansion down the line. But the problem is we don't have that long to wait. So I want them to progress with this works. And they've already said that yesterday they began the process of a site inspection and looking at how they can further develop the site to increase bed capacity. Because we had 41 before the work started. We're going to have 36 afterwards. We would need somewhere between 50 and 60, I imagine, based on population trends, etc.
But we've been here before. You know, planning permission was granted in September 2024. We were told work would begin in numerous dates, not least the first quarter of this year. So what is the timeline for the work to be begun?
Well, the question I asked this morning when I was speaking to them was, what effect will, you know, this latest announcement now have on the timelines? And it's that the timelines won't be affected. So the timeline they gave last Monday is that the works would go out to tender at the end of May with a contractor appointed at the end of August. Now, I had said in your show last week that I felt that had to be taken, you know, with a sort of a health warning, because these things are movable feasts, and we already have evidence with this particular case in Buncrana Community Hospital that deadlines have been missed. But I'm very hopeful that that won't be the case. And as recently as this morning, they've confirmed that they're still aiming for the end of May for the tender, the end of August for a contractor appointment.
How can we have faith in an organisation to deliver when we've had so much slippage here to now, and they don't actually even know how many beds are in the place to begin with?
It's very difficult.
I mean, how important is this? How important? How important is this project to them if they can't even do a bit of research beforehand and get the bed numbers right?
Yeah, Greg, I asked them that question this morning, and I'll be asking them that question again at the follow-up meeting, which is arranged for the 22nd of June, because you're absolutely correct. This is obviously evidence that Dunfermline hasn't been high up their priority list. But I'm very hopeful that we have changed that following the meeting last week and getting a follow-up meeting secured. So that they know that we aren't, as local representatives and indeed as the local community, we are not letting the project go. That whatever about what has happened up until now, and you mentioned 2024, going back to the original planning permission in 2019, which is 7 years ago. So nothing has been done since that planning permission was granted back then. So 7 years have been wasted, and obviously, you know, inflation and everything has taken hold. So the project should have been finished long ago at this stage.
Okay, so recently we saw the opening of a school in Letterkenny for children with additional needs, and it was opened under capacity. It was opened without being able to actually meet the demand that's there. We're supposed to be getting excited and doing cartwheels about a community hospital in Buncrana that is not actually going to be big enough when the work finally starts and when it's actually even finished. Did you put that to the HSE? And if so, what did they say back to you?
Yeah, at the meeting last Monday, that very point was made by myself and by others. And it beggars belief, Greg, that it took about 5 or 6 years for that point to be raised. Like, I can't understand why, back in 2019, when the initial planning permission was granted, everybody at that time just accepted the reduction in the bed numbers. It just doesn't stack up for me. But the response that they gave was, if we're to look at increased capacity now before the work start, that there is no way that that won't cause further delays.
But okay, well,
so, I mean, you're talking at least the next 2 or 3 years.
But we were the you would know, and it's an Inishowen issue as well, but not exclusively Inishowen. We had the 90-10 scheme jammed down our throats because if we didn't accept that, there would be further delays. This is just history repeating itself. We're going to end up with a not fit for purpose facility because, God forbid, it would take another year to get a fit for purpose facility. Are you sure they don't think, well, listen, we're providing all these beds in Letterkenny, stuff in Inishowen?
No, absolutely not. And in fairness, they went through information in relation to the population of the wider Letterkenny area last week and about the 110-bed unit. And all of those are going to be needed to service that wider Letterkenny area. The facility in Buncrana, when the work is completed, will be fit for purpose. In fairness, it'll be state-of-the-art. The only problem with it will be capacity. And that's why I'm delighted that we have secured confirmation from them that they have started the process of looking at increased capacity, albeit with a different set of works that will have to happen after these works are completed. But that's the HSE's fault, that this is, you know, wider mismanagement of the facility in Buncrana.
Just break down these 30, we'll just pick 35 as the number, right? Break down these beds for me for between short-term, long-term hospice beds, for an example, you know, with palliative care so people can be close to home. So what are these 35, what's the makeup of these 35 beds?
Well, I don't have the finer detail on that, but when the number was 30, it was to be 19 long-term stay beds and 11 short-term and respite stay beds. Now, there are two beds, in the facility that were hospice beds, and I had asked at the meeting last week, would those beds still be there when the work was finished? And they said that they would be, albeit that was when the number was at 41. So I don't have clarity at the minute until the statement is released and we see the devil in the
detail. It's not going to be in there. You know, that's not going to be in there. That's why we need local representatives putting these obvious questions to the HSE. We want to know what type of beds they are because they have to service the community and they are staffed differently, right? It's not you just say, right, that's a short-term bed, that's long-stay bed. You know, the staffing has to be in place for the various types of service delivery.
Absolutely, yeah. And when the number was 41, it was to be 30 long-term and 11 short-stay beds. Mm. So when the number had been 30, we'd asked for a breakdown, and that was the response that came back at the meeting of last week. When
1911.
It was 30 long-term. Yeah, it was 1911 when the number of beds was 30 in total. When the number of beds was 41 in total, it was 30 long-term and 11 short term. Until I see the final figure, be it 35 or 36, and until I see what detail, or indeed lack of detail, is in their statement, it's very difficult to say how many long-term and how many short-term or respite beds there will be. But listen, be under no illusion, as soon as I get the statement, I'll be reading through it, and anything I'm not happy with or not clear about, I will be reverting straight back to them, as I have done since the start of this saga.
All right, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it, Fionnán. Councillor Fionnán Bradley, the last key earlock of Inishowen Municipal District. The caller actually just asked, is there a provision for hospice beds in the Buncrana Nursing Hospital? Just so I'm clear, and I want to be clear, when we talk about long stay beds, hospice beds, would you categorise them the same thing? Give us a message so I make sure that I'm not misspeaking in relation to that. But I don't know, just this sense that you have to accept what you have to accept, because if you don't accept, there'll be delay in some way or other. That could be your fault. I think we've been once bitten and should be twice shy off the back of that.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
It is Tuesday, the 28th of April. It's time for Community Garda information. And our guest this week is Garda Sean Swinney from Buncrana Garda Station. Sean, thanks so much for your time.
Morning, good. Thanks.
Right, quite a lot to get through. And we'll start with an appeal in relation to a fatal road traffic collision.
Yeah, this occurred in the R252 at Cloughan on Saturday, the 25th of April. The collision involved a car and a motorcycle and occurred approximately 4:30 p.m. The motorcyclist, a male agent's teens, was sadly pronounced deceased at the scene. There are no other injuries reported. So our appeal is anybody who witnessed the incident, who may have camera footage, including dash cam, now are travelling the area between 4 and 5 p.m., please make this available to investigating Gardaí. If you have any information, contact Ballyshannon Garda Station or the confidential line 1800 666 111, or indeed any Garda Station.
Right, now on to a couple of assaults, actually. We'll start on the Remalton Road.
Yeah, this occurred at Remalton Road in Letterkenny on Thursday, 23rd April. Between approximately 6 p.m. and 6:10 p.m, a woman reported she was waiting in a taxi at that location when the man who was known to her assaulted her. He then left the area on foot in the direction of Main Street. She received medical treatment for minor injuries. So our appeal is anybody who travelled in the area, dash cam, it's in the car park beside the station roundabout, the road between the station roundabout and the Oatfield roundabout and the Port Road leading to Main Street. This is between 5:45 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. If you have footage, please make it available. Or if you witness the incident, please contact Letterkenny Garda Station 91-67-100.
It's a busy little stretch of road, yeah. That, and this happened early evening. So there are people out there with information, and any information you have would very much be of use to Gardaí to progress that investigation, I am sure. Another assault in Letterkenny the next day.
Yeah, so this is Friday the 24th of April, approximately 12 p.m. So Gardaí were flagged down by a member of the public who informed them a public order incident of fight was taking place on the Devil Era Road. So I proceeded to the scene and spoke with two men who were believed to be involved in the incident. Both sustained injuries, none of which are life-threatening. So our appeal is anybody who travel along the Devil Era Road between 11:45 a.m. and 12:15 p.m. on that date, with dashcam footage, make it available. We believe the incident was recorded by two people who were sitting in a vehicle close by. So our appeal, please get in touch with us. And if anybody witnessed the incident, contact Letterkenny, Garda Station.
Right, let's go to Inishowen now and an RTC in Buncrana.
Yeah, this occurred at the Beach Park, Buncrana, near Stragill Beach on Friday the 24th of April at approximately 3:15 p.m. A vehicle was struck by another vehicle, a white Nissan pickup, at that location. Two men were on board the pickup. They didn't remain the scene, travel onwards in the direction of Linsford. The damage caused the vehicle, but there were no injuries. Our appeal is anybody who travelled in the area of Stragill Beach, Beach Park or Linsford between 2:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. with dashcam, make it available. Or if you have any relevant information, please pass it to the Gardaí and Buncrana Garda Station.
And of course, I presume it's in the best interests if perhaps, maybe, for whatever reason, the people in the pickup weren't aware this happened or whatever the circumstances. You've got really good information here. You're going to get further evidence. It's always in a person's best interest to come forward themselves and deal with the matter.
Absolutely,
most likely going to have to deal with it one way or other. Right, dangerous driving, and we'll stay in Inishowen.
Yeah, So this occurred in the area of Slavery in Buncrana. This was the early hours of Sunday, the 26th of April, at approximately 3:55 a.m. So Gardaí were patrolling the area, following reports of a quad being driven in a dangerous manner from Buncrana towards Coghill. The quad in question then approached the patrol car from behind and rammed it at speed. So damages caused the car, but there were no injuries. The quad then left the area immediately and travelled in the direction of Ned's Point. So our appeal is anybody who's travelling in Buncrana, between Buncrana Town and Coghill, or in the areas of Slavery and Ned's Point between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. with dash cam to get in contact. If you observe the quad in the area or have any relevant information, please contact Buncrana Garda Station, or again, you can use the confidential line on 1800 666 111.
Yeah, we've seen too much erratic behaviour on quads. Very serious incident this. And look, the truth is, and I'm not trying to compromise or interfere in their, I mean, they probably didn't drive from Lahey up there. You know, there's probably going to be information locally that I think, even for the people involved, it's in their best interests. I think that that is dealt with. Criminal damage in Letterkenny next.
Yes, occurred in the area of Mullabon in Letterkenny on Thursday, the 23rd of April, at approximately 4 p.m. A resident heard a loud bang and only discovered the living room window had been smashed. So our appeal is, anybody who witnessed the incident, or if you have any relevant information, contact Gardaí and Letterkenny. If anybody's travelled around the area with dash cam footage, we'd ask them please get in touch.
Yeah, late afternoon, 4 p.m, 23rd of April, Mullaghbane, Letterkenny. Again, there's bound to be eyes out there. A reminder for firearm holders.
Yeah, this is a reminder for anybody in the Donegal Division to renew their firearm cert promptly. So each current holder of a firearm cert should receive a renewal in the post 3 months prior to expiry of your current licence. So if you delay in submitting it to the Garda Station too close to the deadline, the application takes some time to process, and then to receive your new cert in the post. What happens then is you're deemed to be legally holding a firearm because you've delayed the application. Yeah. And at that point then, Gardaí can seize the firearm where there's no licence in place. So please don't hesitate to contact your local station. If you have any queries or if you have any difficulties, ring the station and we'll try and sort things out.
Now, right across the island of Ireland, we're coming off the back of another tragic weekend on our roads. And I was saying on the programme yesterday, I know there can be frustration often, even within An Garda Síochána and emergency services, about sort of the failure for the message to get through. But we can't allow that to deter us. The Gardaí are there to enforce as much as they can the rules of the road. And we know statistically we're coming into weekends are dangerous, but we know coming into bank holiday weekends, public holiday weekends, the roads can be extra dangerous. So especially with the various traffic that's out there, you know, there's people towing boats, there's farmers out doing their work, there's people out on their motorbikes, there's, you know, all manner of things, walkers, cyclists, etc. So from a Garda perspective, what activity will there be this weekend, Sean?
Well, from our standpoint there, we'll be conducting high visibility checkpoints and patrols and speed checks across the division over the weekend. So we're appealing to everybody, please drive safely. So 12 drivers have been arrested across Donegal over the course of the past week while driving under influence, 9 for alcohol and 3 for drugs. So we urge drivers, look, don't drive under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Slow down and wear your seatbelt. We know what the results of drinking, drug driving and speed can be. So if you're going to socialise, we'd advise please arrange a lift home in advance. Have a designated driver or arrange a taxi. Don't risk your own life or the lives of other people. Again, mobile phones, keep them out of reach to avoid being distracted. You know, keep your attention on the road at all times. If you're tired, pull over, have a coffee, stretch your legs, and leave extra time for journeys and slow down. Look, please don't take any unnecessary risk, and everybody just enjoy your bank holiday weekend.
For sure, and be conscious as well of the half-life or whatever it's called of whatever substance might well be in your system or not. It's really important the next morning, or in drugs, we don't really know how long that stick around, so you shouldn't be taking them in the first place, but just be conscious of that. And be conscious also too, you talked about high visibility. The Gardaí have a lot of technology now at their disposal in terms of driving without insurance, etc.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You know, things are different. There's a lot of detections out there now, and as you heard from Sean there, 12 people done for drink or drug driving on suspicion of it. And you know the ramifications and implications that has for life in rural Ireland as well, not to mention the terrible danger there. Garda Sean Sweeney, Buncrana Garda Station, thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Have a good week. That item will be back for you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. Okay, you're welcome back to the programme. We're in the company of Sandra Devaney, General Manager at McElhenney's Ballybuffet. We were joking that when we were away, it was like we were sponsored by McElhenney's, though we weren't, such as Aisling's loyalty to your brand.
We're very grateful
Even these wee bags that go under the...
The board like bags. Yeah. They've a little bit viral on with us.
Because there's a bit of certainty with them.
Yeah, and they're brilliant.
You can get a lot in them.
And they beat all the airline regulations, which is great. Yeah, really.
Yeah,
and I think those wee straps are the secret at the side. You can pull them nice and tight.
Bit of confidence, you see. Because when they're at the max, you're fine. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about, Sandra.
No.
Things are going good at McElhenney's.
Thank God. We're you know, heads down, just working hard. Mm-hmm. Just trying our best, like everybody else, I suppose, Craig.
And of course, me and you now are podcast rivals.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think you're safe.
No, I'm not. I'm only messing around. But have you enjoyed tipping your toe in that? Tipping your toe in
that? Do you know what it is? It's less about, I suppose, wanting to do it. But I think it's really important that the customer sees behind McElhenney's and sees, you know, the stories about all the people that work in there.
Because, you know, the social media is great, right? But it often is clips. Isn't it nice to sort of be able to pull the curtain back in a longer format?
Yeah, I think that's the thing with McElhenney's. I mean, it's always been important to me to bring the human element for people to realise we're just like boys and girls next door, and everybody in there has a story. And I think it's lovely for people to hear that we all have the real stuff going on as well behind the camera. You know, it's real life stuff.
I 100% agree, because even if you're very loyal to some brands, there can be a detachment.
That's
right. Not locally, but you know what I mean. Whereas, you know, you are like, well, this is us. We're of the community. We're all here together.
Yeah.
Right. An exciting event coming up on, talking of online and reaching people in different ways. It's a girls' night live fashion show at 7 p.m. this Thursday, April 30th. And it's to celebrate a remarkable 55 years in business. So is this the first time you've done this, or what's the format?
We kind of, I don't think, we've done quite a lot of lives. I think we were probably one of the first independent businesses that started lives in lockdown. And our 50th anniversary, we did a 7-hour live, and we had quite a lot of viewers. Obviously, it was lockdown. There was a huge amount of people logged into that and watched it. So I suppose for the 55th anniversary, it started off, we'll just do a fashion show. Unusual McElhenney style with my team. It grew legs. And we're like, well, let's see what we can do with this. And I have to say, man, woman, child, anybody's welcome to watch it. We have a huge amount of followers all over the world. So we thought it would be lovely to be able to bring all that together and let them watch it, you know, all at the same time. Because they often say, oh, we missed your live. They might have been sleeping. So we thought, let's see how far this can go. And a lovely way to mark the work that John has done for 55 years as well. Craig, I think that's really important to sort of mark the importance of a business that he just started in the back of a van, has now, in its own way, kind of reached across the globe. And
yeah,
I think...
there's many reasons for that. But you know, the saying goes, you be nice to the people on the way up because you meet them on the way down. There's
so
no
true.
On the way down. But the fundamentals of what started that business are still there today.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And that the scale has increased, but the fundamentals are there. And that's why it's successful. One of the reasons why it's successful.
We always say that, you know, keep it simple. We're very much customer centric. It's always about the customer. If in doubt, go back to the customer and they'll, you know, you can work it out from there. And another thing we always say, well, what would John say? And, you know, I think keeping those basic, as you say, you know, fundamental rules of just keep it so simple. And I think that's the problem nowadays. Businesses overthink it, but just always pair it back to the customer.
The successful ones don't, though. There is a theme here. I speak to quite a few people in businesses, and that sort of way of doing business really, really works. And it's easier. Isn't it easier to be yourself than to be something you're
not? Oh, 100%. You know. People will always, you know, obviously we're always doing videos and we're like, just be yourself, because people work out really quickly when you're not being authentic. Exactly, Craig. Yeah, and I think that's why.
You can't put on a show, you can't pretend, because you get found out very, very quickly.
So true, yeah.
This is me, less the swear words.
100%. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure that you want to say them sometimes too, but we can't always.
So what's the format then of this show, Thursday, 7 p.m? So what? It's a fashion show. Are you doing it in store?
We're going to do it in store. So it's going to be live in Balbuffet. So we're obviously, we've created a link for people to log in across the world. We put all the different timings from all the different countries. So all we need to do is just to log in and watch it. They know the live. We're also having it on Instagram, McElhenney's Instagram and McElhenney's Facebook, live at 7. We have a number in our head that we kind of are hoping will hit earlier on, and they're probably about an hour and a half, or 15 minutes maybe. So they just log in, and once we hit this number, we will know then, you know, that's kind of our target in our head. But it's obviously
Is it going to remain in your head until such time
as
it's
not giving it away.
Okay, good.
Because I think there's so many loyal followers, they would be disappointed if we didn't hear it,
I know, yeah.
But they'll look it. You'll know if we hit it, because Brilliant. The fanfare will be out. But also, there'll be loads of giveaways on the night, a bit of fun and just ourselves, you know. But obviously there's going to be fantastic fashion as well for, you know, majority women. But we will have a little bit of men's and kids in there too.
Yeah. Who's the host? Is it you?
I'll host it,
the hostess with the mostess?
Well, I don't know, but we'll try anyway. It could all go badly wrong.
I hope it does, in a way, because it'll be even more entertaining and more hits.
You'll see the panic on my face if anything goes wrong,
Greg. Absolutely zero chance of that, I would say. As you say, it'll be really interesting, because you'll have people watching from all over the world as well.
I think that's the best thing, you know. We have so many loyal followers, you know, that are so loyal to us, considering they live in Australia, Canada, America, South Africa, you know, and it really shocks us so much that they buy of us when they could buy this stuff in their own countries. Mm. You know, you're paying for shipping and that. Mm. But these guys are so loyal. So it's our way of kind of bringing them together.
But you know as well, you know, I don't know much about fashion, but you know, You sort of trust sizes and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, people, I think that's what a lot of, so if it's clothes, you trust the size, or you trust the fact there's not going to be a pulled thread.
Yes,
so, you
exactly.
Know that, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think that's what helps then.
Yeah.
To the quality.
They definitely trust us, you know, and I think that's one thing. We're very honest. I always say you're better not selling it than overselling it and there being a problem with it. So,
the online side of the business, I'm not looking for a breakdown, but it's huge for you, isn't it?
It's obviously grown an awful lot since lockdown, and even people that maybe couldn't, you know, buy online, we can see the confidence. Obviously, it's much easier, and I think it's a big focus for us always to make our online as user-friendly as possible. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, you know yourself, you know, it's getting easier and easier every day.
Of course it is.
But I don't think it'll ever take away from that human interaction, which is our magic.
Yeah, for sure. It's that balance. It's getting the balance right, which is the amazing side of things. And I think really, you know, not just your business, but many businesses, we're always going to have a percentage of in-person online.
Yeah.
But the lockdown fast-forwarded all of that,
really,
I think, to some extent. Right, so how do people make sure they don't miss out? The Girls Night live fashion show with a bit of fellas and kids chucked in there as well, 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. this Thursday. By the sounds of things, if you hit this target that you've set in your head, I'm thinking stuff coming down from the ceiling. I'm thinking, I don't know what's going to happen. Are you planning something
that? We have a plan.
We have a little plan. These little things,
I mean, it might be very underwhelming because we're so focused on getting the product and getting that right. But
you'll be like,
look,
I was on Highland. Get the nets and the balloons. They're expecting that now. I need netting.
No,
balloons.
I'm going to have to go back now and make it huge. Yeah. But no, you'll definitely know. But, you know, I've no doubt the loyal followers, they're going to make it happen. We're going to make it happen.
It's going to be good fun. Right, okay. And you just log in, don't you? There's
so just log on McElhenney's Facebook, either page or Instagram. There's also a link that you can register so you can get a reminder. So that link we've been sharing out. We've had the highest number of people ever registering for an event. So that's given us sort of
it's
a good...
It's going to be good fun.
Do you know what, Craig? That's the thing. Yeah. It's projecting a bit of positivity 100%, out there. A bit of fun, lightheartedness away from everything else for at least just an hour.
Right, that's 7 p.m. this Thursday, April 30th. It celebrates 55 years of business, and it's going to be good fun. Lots of fashion, lots of fun with your host, Sandra Devaney. So check out McElhenney's Ballet Buffet. And we're all very busy, so you can pre-register and get a reminder just as it's going live. Fantastic to see the business doing so well. And you're looking fantastic as well, always.
Thank you. And you,
we
Craig.
Always love having you in.
I love being here. Thank you.
Right. I'm joined on the programme now by Ellen Coyne, author of Dirty Dancing, the inside story of the Irish dancing cheating scandal. Good morning to you, Ellen.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. And congratulations on your book. A fantastic thing, be it your first or one of many. It's always great, isn't it, to get it out there, get it published into the hands of your readers.
Yeah, it's great. It's been so amazing just to get to see it in bookshops. And yeah, I hope hopefully people enjoy it. But yeah, it's great to have it. It's obviously a lonely process writing a book, but it's great when it's finally out in the world.
And of course, Irish dancing, the glitz and the glamour, it's a part of the fabric of Ireland, isn't it? But it is also a subject matter, a space where there's an awful lot of intrigue and stuff going on that maybe the general population don't know about.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, before I broke this story in 2022, I would have assumed that Irish dancing was like a competitive world, but ultimately a kind of an innocuous, wholesome world. It kind of has that innocent image as one of our biggest cultural exports. But I suppose when I got pulled into this story, I ended up being a little bit of an interloper in what actually ended up being a far more cutthroat and competitive world than an outsider like me would have assumed. I didn't really know that there could be such intense rivalries, that there could be so much suspicion, and that even there could be allegations of cheating in a sport like Irish dancing.
And of course, that is shocking in and of itself. But what you are recognising as well, which sometimes we can overlook, not you, but we as a population, is that there's victims of this. A lot of them are young people. A lot of lives very severely affected by this type of activity.
Absolutely. And that's, I suppose, one of the things I was trying to focus on in the book. Like, it's a book about a cheating scandal, and all of the children in it are bystanders who are ultimately innocent. If you think of the things like the All-Irelands or the World Championships, the dancers on the stage, the top 1% of dancers in the world, the overwhelming majority of them are under the age of 18. And in cases where it was alleged that Irish dancing teachers were engaging in this practice known as fesh fixing, trying to rig or arrange the result of a competition before it had even started, they were doing it without the knowledge of their own dancing students, and students who in many cases were actually talented enough to win on their own anyway. So this is a massive breach of trust when you consider the fact that some of these dancers would spend more time every week with their Irish dancing teacher than they would with their own parents.
And this topic, or in reading this book, are we looking back, Ellen, on how Irish dancing was, or is it an insight into how it operates now?
It's both. So the book starts off with a little bit of a history of Irish dancing. So it's about how it started off in the 1920s as a vehicle for the Gaelic revival. It would have been up there with the GAA as kind of a political project. But from the moment that CLRG, that's An Cumasúin na Roinne Gaelica, the biggest and oldest governing body of Irish dancing in the world, from the moment it was created in the late 1920s, early 1930s, people were fighting with each other about who gets to say what Irish dancing is and how it works and how it should be judged. And it really seems that people have been fighting about Irish dancing for as long as they've been doing it. It brings us through to the 1970s, when there was a bit of a resurgence of Irish dancing. They created the first World Championships, and I suppose that, and obviously the massive cultural accelerant that was Riverdance in the 1990s, is what has made Irish dancing what it is today, which is, you know, for better or worse, a sport and an organisation that revolves entirely around competition and winning. And that, I suppose, is the culture from which you would, a culture that made itself conducive, I suppose, to a cheating scandal. Though obviously Irish dancing doesn't have a monopoly on cheating in the world of competitive sport either.
It certainly doesn't. And I suppose, too, we have to ask the question, and I think you do, you know, where what next for Irish dancing now that, you know, there's so much of awareness of what had been going on historically?
Yeah, and I suppose that's a difficult one for Irish dancing, because in the wake of the cheating scandal, it was like nothing changed and everything changed. There was some tightening up of the rules in the wake of the cheating scandal to try and make it more difficult for somebody who would like to try to cheat or fix a competition. But ultimately, like, this was a story that never really came to a satisfactory conclusion for the world of Irish dancing. It almost brought CLRG down. It almost meant that the 2025 World Championships couldn't go ahead because they'd spent so much time and money on this cheating scandal. And ultimately, well, a journalist like me can go in and cover an organisation when it's going through a scandal and going through this kind of moment of reckoning. Ultimately, an organisation can only decide that it wants to change itself. External pressure can only do so much. And the conclusion that I came to, and other people in the world of Irish dancing came to, is that it was just better for the world of Irish dancing to move on from this, that it had taken up too much time and attention, and this was a scandal that was never really going to have a conclusion or an end that would satisfy all of the parties involved.
Yeah, indeed. And in speaking to those, you know, who've given so much, the young people, and you do have their stories contained within their book, you know, were you surprised at the impact it had on them, the seriousness of it? Because I think for some, they might think it is some sort of a, you know, just a bit of a gossipy story that's kind of interesting and sexy and stuff, right? The story itself, I mean. But, you know, you got down to those people who sacrificed so much and paid the cost of this. What were those conversations like? What did you learn from them?
Yeah, and I think that was one of my greatest regrets from the story. Like, I know some people thought that this was kind of like a funny story about a weird niche sport, but like, you had a lot of children who were looking at the trophies and medals in their bedroom and suddenly questioning if they could trust what had been their own achievements. And it's a world champions in their mid-teens. They have sacrificed so much of their childhood to get where they are. Like, Irish dancing has evolved to such a degree that it really is an elite form of dance. Yeah. And natural talent can actually only get you so far. And I just think that it was that breach of trust of children that was the most regrettable, saddest part of this story. Mm. But I suppose the fortunate thing is, because these people are so young, you know, 2022 was a long time ago for a 15-year-old or 16-year-old that took to the stage in the World Championships last month. And that's the greatest hope, I suppose, that as the next generation continues to move through Irish dancing, that this is a practice that is stomped out and something that they will hopefully never have to hear about or never have to worry about throughout their competitive career.
Really interesting. I never really thought about that. It puts an asterisk on those that lost out, but also on those that succeeded, doesn't it? It can tarnish both sides. It's the Dirty Dancing, the inside story of the Irish dancing cheating scandal. It's available right now and it's an easy read. I like the writing. This sounds, you're not going to stick this as a quote, but I like the way the writing, the text is on the page, you know, easy to read. Stick that on the back.
It's important.
I mean, it is important, right? Well, congratulations, Ellen. I presume it's available where everyone would expect to buy a good book.
Yes, everywhere. And if I do get the chance to get up to Donegal, I will try to sign a few copies as well in some local bookshops.
Brilliant. Well, let us know and we can announce that out for you closer to the time.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye. That's Ellen Coyle. That's the book there. I think lots of you would be interested in it. I kind of stumbled upon a series on Netflix. It's called Untold. There's a very interesting... I've watched two so far. Very, very interesting. One on equestrian. It's quite serious stuff, and also on chess cheating. So if you're interested in sort of this space of controversy in sport or activities like that, check out the Untold series on Netflix, particularly the equestrian horse riding and the chess one. Fascinating stuff. Right, that's where we have to leave it today. Have a fantastic Tuesday. Enjoy the weather if you can. I'm sure most of you can. And look after yourself.